Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan, Blake Murphy, J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. Give them a follow at J.D. Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, wherever you do your socials. Subscribe to the podcast, The Fan Morning Show, wherever you get that. Rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. Speaking of good stuff, Toronto Raptors drafted a pretty good one at number 4 overall last year, Scottie Barnes. He has blown away expectations, at least as a scorer. I think he's met expectations at worst in terms of playmaking. He's getting there defensively for the most part. Mm-hmm. In most seasons in the NBA, a kid doing this and leading all rookies in minutes, playing on a playoff team, would have a good chance at Rookie of the Year. I say that. We actually don't know because there's only been one Rookie of the Year in the last 15 years who played on a winning team. And it was Ben Simmons who was kind of doing the red shirt rookie year after sitting out a year. And there was obviously the arguments with Donovan Mitchell and everything about whether he was a true rookie. So Scottie Barnes, contextualizing where he is in the rookie year race, comparing him to guys like Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, Franz Wagner, other guys with maybe more counting stats and especially points per game, is hard. And then you get to, well, if you're going to include team context, you're going to include defense, you're going to include impact, you got to look at the number 3 pick. Evan Mobley of the Cleveland Cavaliers has been presumed to be the rookie of the year, not only by NBA media, but by betting markets as well, for the bulk of the season now. Mm-hmm. However, Scottie Barnes has closed that gap. He's closed that gap analytically. I think he's closed that gap narratively a little bit. They play tonight. The Raptors host the Cavs. It's a big game for the 6th seed. It's a big game for rookie of the year. JD, do you think a strong Scottie Barnes performance up against Evan Mobley tonight can shift, you know, any voters on the fence here heading into these last 10 games?
Short of the playoffs, this is the game of the year for the Raptors.
Right. And playoffs you vote before the playoffs. So for rookie of the year purposes, this is it.
For getting that 6 seed, you lose tonight, it's over. Right? You're going to be 2 games back of Cleveland. It's really, even with the Raptors schedule, which I believe has some soft spots at the end of it, it's hard to imagine them leapfrogging a team that they don't have a tiebreaker with. It means they'd have to make up 3 games on Cleveland.
It's not happening.
And I don't think that happens without a win tonight. So the win-loss is huge. And I think that's why it matters. I think that's why this game matters in terms of these two guys going head-to-head more than anything. It's simply, we're going to care about the outcome of this game, and whoever impacts the winning more of this, if there is a guy that impacts the winning more in this game, that is going to lead, for me anyways, as a tiebreaker between the two of them for the Rookie of the Year award. It's weird because, like you said, Blake, we had kind of, it seemed like we had made up our minds on who the Rookie of the Year was. We had Cade, who missed too many games, and yes, he's got, Cade's been great, and again, they won again yesterday, and if you look at it, you brought it up the other day with Jeff Van Gundy, the idea of how he's carrying an offense. Well, yeah, he's been their best offensive player, right? Ailish just turned off her camera on the Zoom and then not her microphone, and is like sneezing and coughing into her mic, but she turned off her camera so we couldn't see. That was amazing. But we had this kind of presumable thing with Mobley where all year long, you mentioned it, betting markets, everyone was celebrating Mobley. It wasn't just him contributing to a winning team. It was the way he was contributing to a winning team. It's advanced defense from a rookie was the one thing with him that was quite incredible. But now you've seen this thing where Fred VanVleet goes out for the Raptors for long stretches, and Jared Allen has been out for the Cavs. And guess what? Both guys have had bigger roles, and both guys have gone up and down. Mobley has had massive nights. Barnes has had massive nights. Both guys are showing that they're capable of once in a while absolutely going off and carrying their teams and impacting the winning as central figures. But most of the winning impact, I would say, for Barnes this year on this Raptors team, I don't feel like he's been as at the forefront of it. It has been more in this stretch. So I'm trying to balance the entirety of the season. And yes, Mobley to me has been still the number three guy in a three-headed snake, of course. The other two guys were all-stars. But that's how I kind of feel about the Raptors situation too, which is, well, Barnes, if we're taking things on balance, has now been the number three guy in terms of impacting winning for the Raptors. Would you agree with that, or would you say that it's someone that's been ahead of him?
No, I would agree with that because, I mean, if there was going to be someone ahead of him, it's OG Anunoby, and OG's missed 30 games at this point. So you're looking at
overall
impact.
So you take Gary
Trent
out of it, like, for the season?
I mean, Gary Trent is – he's over-delivered on expectations this year, and there was certainly that stretch where he was their entire offense. But mm-hmm. I think the hot and cold nature of him and the fact that we're back now closer to last season's Gary Trent defensively than mm-hmm. early season Gary Trent defensively, I'd probably lean towards Scottie Barnes. He has a hand in more things that the Raptors do.
Okay, and listen, I'm not going to disagree, right? Especially lately. Barnes has had some just eye-popping nights. And if you're looking at stats in such a close race, all of a sudden Barnes has taken the lead on just about everything. He's played more minutes, right? He's scoring more. His three-point percentage is better. His free throw percentage is better. He's got more steals. He's got more assists. Like, go across the board. Basically, Mobley is, what, getting more blocks per game? And it's not even by much. It's by 0.1. Like, you would think that... Or, sorry, that's turnovers. But, yeah, blocks. He's got a block on him a game. It's not exactly like there's a strong statistical case for Mobley. I think that what this is going to come down to is here the winning actually matters, who finishes higher up in the seeding, but also how the voters measure defense. Because that has been the case for Mobley all year long. And that's not, this gets back to what Jeff Van Gundy said yesterday. And this is why I think this is so important in terms of the discussion around these two players. If you're watching the two games, Cavs and Raptors, and I've watched way more Raptors games, obviously, than Cavaliers. But are you going to balance Mobley's impact on the Cavaliers winning and on the defensive end as the splitter versus Barnes having slightly better statistics? I would say yes. I would say that Mobley, to me, has been the rookie of the year. But I do think that can change down the stretch of these final 10 games. Again, if the Raptors end up in that sixth seed, and if Scottie Barnes continues to be on a bit of a tear like he's been on the last month, where he's like a 20-point-a-game player, and he's their second most central figure in terms of them winning basketball games. So I think it's razor thin, but I would still give it to Mobley based on those early months of the season where, as good as Barnes was, I think Mobley was night in, night out, a little bit more of a needle mover in terms of the Cavaliers winning basketball games.
I wonder if you put a little bit more stock into peaking kind of near the end, like if there's a recency bias of Scottie Barnes like coming down the stretch being the guy. I know voting is probably a very difficult thing to do a whole season worth of analysis, and maybe Toronto also gets a little bit less, you know, because the NBA is very American based media, and like, you know, Scottie probably doesn't move the needle as much for an American viewer. But I think the biggest thing for me is how much stock I put into tonight. I love the head-to-head matchup. I think that's the best way you're going to be able to analyze who's the better player. So no pressure coming into tonight on
and
Scottie,
last
but
one
I think,
was great.
Yeah. And I think that like you look at those almost as the biggest needle mover. But yeah, I think they're, if I'm judging how things are going, Scottie here down the stretch is peaking and he's getting a lot of attention and he's breaking records that other players have never done. Like, I don't know what the stat was the other night of it was like the last players to do this. It was like LeBron, so-and-so, all these big names.
Yeah.
And
his 35
Scottie,
or 31, yeah, 16 and six game or
yeah.
whatever.
Like, that's just insane. So I think I put a lot more, maybe selfishly, in what he does here leading up to getting the Raptors into a playoff position or helping propel that team to victory or to get into the postseason. So that's how I would view it. Obviously, super excited to see how they match up once again.
It's a fascinating rookie of the year race for me. And I have a little by the numbers thing coming in the pregame tonight on Sportsnet that goes into a little bit of this, but to share some of it now is, you know, we can try to capture all this stuff, right? There are some impact stats out there. There's nothing as robust as WAR in baseball or anything like that, mm-hmm. but we can look at some advanced metrics to try to see, hey, if we take Jared Allen out of Mobley's lineups, if we take Pascal out of Scotty's lineups, if we regress for some luck factors, you know, how do these guys shake out? And even those are split. Barnes has the edge on Mobley in win shares, in VORP based on box plus minus, in SPA, which is like kind of a win probability added metric, and then RPM, which is ESPN's real plus minus, XPM, which is my favorite kind of catch-all per possession metric. Both of those favor Mobley. They're basically 1-2 in everything in some order. There's a couple, like 538's Raptor model really doesn't like Mobley for some reason, but otherwise they're basically 1-2 in everything. So even those things that try to control for all these factors are split. So it does come down to, you know, it's going to come down to voter preference, and it's going to come down to, yeah, a little bit of narrative power down the stretch. And one thing that you could look at is, hey, tonight, not only are they going head to head, but they're going head to head with the player on their team who you could most point to and be like, okay, that's a guy who makes life easier for this rookie. So with Evan Mobley, Jared Allen statistically has been a larger driver of their defense. They have struggled a little bit without Jared Allen. They're 6-10 when Allen's out this year. You can't ask a rookie to anchor your defense as a whole, but there's some statistical evidence that Mobley benefits from being beside Allen. OG being out, meanwhile, the Raptors have hung in. They're 14-16 with OG out. They're 8-5 with Pascal out. They're 7-7 with Fred out. There's some overlap there where you're missing a couple of guys or whatever, but that suggests to me that Scotty Barnes has done a pretty decent job stepping into larger roles night to night as the team's health status necessitates. And I think if you see that tonight and you see, hey, this is a guy who is helping drive this team now that they're missing pieces, I think that that could be a strong data point for the voters. Now, the betting markets disagree with us. They think it's a wrap. Like, if you actually think this is still a close race voting wise, you should be all over that with Scotty Barnes, because the markets have Mobley as an immense favorite. But I think tonight could sway a lot of people. I think, and not even sway, because I think a lot of voters are probably like, oh, it's a 1A, 1B, maybe even a 1C with Cade Cunningham situation.
No, I see. All due respect to Cade, and he does deserve
to be. But you know that people are going to vote. This is the most, of all the awards, this is the most look at the box score stats award historically. So we do have to allow for the possibility that not all 100 voters are looking at this that closely.
Sure. But I also believe that if you look at the box score, it's impossible to deny that Scotty, just based on the added minutes that he has played, I actually look at this as in terms of total stats.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this as total statistics, not just as a per game situation, because if you're just looking at it per game, then I don't think this is the year to do it. It's such a deep rookie class. It's an incredible rookie class. That's why I want this for Scotty Barnes, and that's why I think that a lot of Raptors fans are especially invested in it. Well, there's two reasons. One is that everybody, myself included, looked at this pick and went, what? They went with Scotty Barnes over Jalen Suggs? And so it plays in perfectly into the Raptors' mindset of like, hey, people doubted us, we got it wrong, and look at it go. That and the draft stuff even goes back to like what, Charlie Villanueva? Is it before that, in terms of the Raptors being Raptors fans love getting the pick right, who doesn't? But I'll never forget that moment specifically of just, you know, an organization getting dunked on by every single angle. And that's how it felt like with a lot of what happened with Suggs and Barnes. But two is that the rookie class is incredibly deep, and it's a lot of prominent young players that you could build an organization around, right?
Yep.
Cade Cunningham, if there's one thing you could say, is that the pick for a little while, it was, wow, Evan Mobley's so good that did they really blow it by taking Cade Cunningham? And now we're looking at that a little differently later in the season, going, oh, right, there's a reason why we shouldn't decide who the rookie of the year is in the second month of the season or the third month of the season. Oh, we've had moments where Scotty Barnes, I'll say this about Scotty. Lately, and again, I'm not watching as many Cavs games, so it's not as fair, but I do watch the Cavs, and Blake, they were our Cavs earlier in the year. Like, I would say out of all the teams that I've watched this year, the Cavaliers have been very, very high on the list. To me, Scotty Barnes, when the Raptors win and when he plays at his best, does drive the success a little bit more than Mobley. I think that his offense is just more, I can create my own shot. than Evan Mobley does. And that when we're talking about, hey, having one guy out of the lineup, removing those Jared Allen lobs from Darius Garland, those just easy buckets and that spacing, I think has impacted the way that I've looked at Mobley a little bit more differently. Whereas, like, Blake, to your point earlier about the indicators of Barnes being a little bit more level based on who's around him, I think for Barnes' offense, given that his ball handling is much better and that he's got just a more consistent offensive package of where he likes to get onto the floor, the assist making and the playmaking for other people that maybe we looked at it as not as advanced as we thought it might be, but as of late, given added responsibility, has continued to flourish. That, to me, is the real, wow, this feels like it's tipping in Barnes' direction. And that's why I think tonight really matters in this Rookie of the Year race, is that if Barnes can win and we end up with the Raptors leapfrogging Cleveland in the standings, I think that a lot of people are going to look at this and go, boy, Fred VanVleet missed how many games? Fred VanVleet wasn't in the lineup for how much down the stretch? Scotty Barnes really is initiating the offense this many times for the Raptors, and they're winning, and he's getting to his spots, and maybe he's even being guarded by Evan Mobley in some situations and scoring on him. I don't know how you could be a viewer or a voter and not look at Scotty's stats, where all the counting stats are slightly ahead of Evan Mobley, his team being a little bit ahead in the standings, and the most visible game between the two guys tilting in Scotty's favor, and not have it affect you in some way. Like, I know we all fell in love with Evan Mobley earlier in the year, but that's not a reason why you should win Rookie of the Year. Yes, you need to take every game into account. Yes, I believe that Mobley had more impact on winning over the course of the entire season, but I don't think that it's so worlds apart that the betting market should be saying that the race is over. I very much believe that this is a, we've got 10 games to determine who this Rookie of the Year is. Let's find out, and there's no more valuable game than tonight.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there's a lot on the line. I think, again, if there's a voter who pulls up just the stats, you're going to see Mobley and Barnes pretty close. Even their true shooting percentages are almost identical. There's not a good way to statistically chop this up. So it's going to come down to feel like that. And I know, look, I know you discount it. People are going to vote for Kate. Even like the NBA.com rookie ladder, which Raptors fans have obsessed over because, I don't know, because it's on NBA.com.
Why? Who even writes that?
Not a person with a vote is what I try to tell people.
Oh.
But they have Scotty Barnes third now.
Rookie and of the Year second.
I write that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's to draw in eyeballs to NBA.com, and so they want to flip it and have other play. Like, don't be dumb. That's not important.
Yes, I would agree. But there is going to be some statistical strength for Cade outright, because this is, like I said, this is the award that historically goes the most that way. But yeah, tonight is big. And tonight, for just to kind of reset the game in general, again, the Raptors, JD said it off the top, the Raptors have to win if they're gonna get the sixth seed. Not mathematically, but practically, they have to win this game. They lost. They're on the wrong side of the tiebreaker with Cleveland and Chicago. So you have to add basically one extra game in the games behind column for Toronto. And this is their last game against one of those two teams. So you've got a little bit of insulation that, like, you're still 2.5 up on Brooklyn in terms of hosting a play-in game and then getting a second crack at it at home as well. But this is big. You even if you like the play-in, as we do, even if you are very confident the Raptors could beat, if not Brooklyn, one of Charlotte or Atlanta in a play-in scenario, you would still strongly prefer to avoid that and lock in a full playoff series with a Philly or a Milwaukee or a Boston, or hey, Miami's sputtering right now and fighting. So maybe they slide. They're only a game and a half up on third, even though they sit at the top of the conference.
Here's the other exciting part about this, I would say, for tonight is I especially without Jared Allen, I think the Raptors are much better than Cleveland. And there was a lot of, boy, is Cleveland good. This is why it's tough to break early narratives. Right? This is why it's really difficult to overcome storylines from earlier in a season, and why I think the betting markets reflect what you said, Blake. Like, what are the odds as of today? Did you have them?
I can, if you give me one second. The Raptors are 3.5-point favorites tonight.
No. I meant the Barnes versus Barnes versus Mobley in terms of Rookie of the Year, because I can't understand how it could be a large separation. I could see it like, I think the last I saw the MVP award was Embiid was like -160. And there's this strong analytical case for Jokic, and then there's also a great case for Giannis Antetokounmpo because of what his team has done this year. But that's the way I'd be looking at the Rookie of the Year award is, okay, maybe Evan Mobley is a minus 160 favorite, or that's what he maybe could be or should be. But having it be anything that's greater than that, with given what Scottie Barnes has done lately and given the fact that, again, if you're going to say it's a box score award, then it should go to Barnes. Like, he's the guy. He has the box scores. He has the totals. He has the minutes. He's got everything. Like, he is basically the counting stat guy over Mobley in just about every single sense. It is only about people's early affiliation with the Cavaliers being the surprising team of the season and how it was, oh, no one saw this team being this good. Same with DeMar's MVP stuff, right? DeMar DeRozan was in the MVP conversation because he was elevating the Bulls to a one seed and nobody saw that, and we had to ask the question. As the year went on, that has dissipated. And it should have a little bit with Evan Mobley's Rookie of the Year candidacy. It should not be night and day. Like, again, Mobley... I'm not being a total homer here. I have Mobley as a slight favorite in it going into tonight, but I would be betting on Scottie Barnes right now because I think his team is better. I think the Raptors are going to win tonight. I think that Barnes is in a different place in terms of the way that he's impacting winning now down the stretch, and so I would be betting Barnes to win this award. I really think he's going to win it.
So I got Barnes at plus 750 a couple weeks ago, which feels good. That's shrunk to plus 580, but that still feels long.
That's
Mobley is a minus
high.
So it's down at a couple books right now, so maybe they're adjusting. But the one that still has it live right now, it's minus 910 for Evan Mobley.
So that's absurd. Minus 910 for Evan Mobley is absolutely absurd. I don't know where the case would begin. Like, so
well,
all the
case
voters
is that all the numbers are more or less the same. Cleveland is slightly better, and Mobley has the narrative strength, is what I think that they would be going with there. There's also a possibility that there's too much early season money on Mobley, and they're trying to balance that out a little bit.
Yeah, that's probably a little bit of this. That has to be a little bit of this. I would say as a huge fan of the narrative, right, someone who tries to trumpet the narrative many times, I hate the narrative here. I don't see it. Like, Blake, would you agree that Mobley has the slight edge right now in terms of he should be the Rookie of the Year, but Barnes?
Yes, but again, I'd frame it as 1A, 1B, not 1 and 2.
Yeah.
They're extremely close. Statistically, impact-wise, like, however you advanced stats, basic stats, watching their impact on games, however you chop it up. And I felt more strongly that Mobley was ahead, you know, around the All-Star break or so, but Barnes has been outright better than him since then, and I think he's closed the gap, and that's revealed itself in some of those impact metrics and stuff I mentioned. All right, that was a lot of us chewing on something, but it's time for another something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Every time I forget that's coming and I giggle.
Same.
We talked with our pal Ben Ennis about potential bench options. He tried to give us the Brett Gardner sell. We've thrown out Ketel Marte, Ian Happ. A potentially very inexpensive and interesting option that might not be on the radar shook free yesterday. The Dodgers designated Matt Beaty for assignment. Lefty first baseman slash outfielder who has not gotten a lot of opportunity because he's been with the Dodgers and they're so loaded and you know, where do you fit in as an extra lefty bat in the best lineup in baseball? He has, though, a 600 plate appearance sample in his career of being an above average hitter, a minor league track record that suggests he can be even better than that. You know, maybe if he's not playing only once or twice a week. Again, a guy who can spell Vlad at first, who can play a little bit of the corner outfields. He's even spent some time at third base for the Dodgers. So you get a little bit of versatility there. A left-handed bat, a guy who is probably going to be dirt cheap because he just got DFA'd. Not the sexiest name, but when you're giving Greg Bird a full slate of plate appearances every game because you need to find some sort of lefty bat for the bench, a guy with a 110 WRC plus for his career as a lefty against righties, I'm kicking the tires on Matt Beaty. One more candidate for the Jays' final roster spot coming out. That's something to chew on. Let's take a break. When we come back, Jamal Mayers, former NHL forward, current Sportsnet analyst. Let's talk a little bit more about that Maple Leafs debut for Mark Giordano and Kevin Blackwell. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports 590, The Fan.
The code word for today's episode to text to 590-590 to qualify for your shot to win Leafs Jets tickets on March 31st is Stanley.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a fan morning show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Leafs squeaking out a win over the lowly New Jersey Devils with their debut of the Drew House jerseys. We're joined by a guy who was on the studio panel last night. Early wake up for us this morning. Jamal Mayers, former NHL forward and current Sportsnet analyst. Good morning. Thanks for joining us so early.
No problem at all. How's everyone doing?
Oh, we're good. You know, we're debating the jerseys, if we like them or not. We won't get too much into them, but a yes or no from you off the top.
I love it. I think that we can't be old and grumpy and say we don't like progress. I think a collaboration like this is what will attract new, young fans. And it's not for me to say at my age what's cool anymore. So if the kids think it's cool, then it's cool.
All right. If the kids think it's cool, well, I'll put myself in that block. I think it's cool. So you know what? I'm a fan. I wouldn't buy it, but I thought it looked snappy last night. Looking snappy. The new players for the Toronto Maple Leafs got their debut last night. I know it wasn't, you know, the biggest sample size. What did you think initially of the debut of Giordano and Blackwell and how they fit with this Leafs roster?
Yeah, I thought Gio did a nice job of complimenting his young D partner, and he played within himself. He got a glimpse of everything that he'll be able to do. He's responsible. He's hard to play against. He makes the simple play when it's necessary. He'll be a calming influence on the entire team just from a leadership perspective. He'll be rejuvenated coming home, even though he's 38. And to expect him to play more than 18 to 19 minutes is probably unrealistic, but he offers a lot still at his advanced age, and he's probably re-energized to do something special in his hometown.
Were you surprised?
For Blackwell.
Sorry. No, go ahead. Finish the thought on Blackwell.
I thought Blackwell played well. He's obviously a bottom six guy, but he showed great speed and energy, and I think he's going to help a lot on that fourth line. To get in on pucks quickly, obviously his other two lineys aren't the fastest, so I think that he'll help complement them very well.
Yeah, I mean, his other two linemates were playing, like, I think both under 10 minutes. Both guys, like, clocked in, I want to say, around, like, 6. And it's just, yeah, you're really starting to see the Leafs lean on those top three lines, and it's looking more and more like it's going to be that way come playoff time. So you are a hometown guy that came home. And I wonder what you thought he was going through, even as a veteran player, because, yeah, you came back to Toronto for that 09 season. And just like what even a guy like what that would mean to someone like Mark Giordano, who not only comes home, but comes home in a fairly visible game. You know, like I know it's Bieber night, whatever. It's not something that's actually of any significance more than any other regular season win. But there are some added eyeballs. There's just a little extra different energy in the building. You show up, you're a Maple Leaf, and yeah, you've got the people from home that are celebrating you returning. Like, how much goes into a day like that? How much went into a day like that for you?
Well, there's going to be a lot of one of the things people don't really consider is that. Having grown up here, especially for Gio, coming to a great team, and you know, unfortunately, our team was kind of rebuilding at that point.
Rebuilding, yeah.
well, there's going to be a lot of people pulling at him, so he's going to find it hard initially, in my opinion, to satisfy all the people in his life that have meant something to him that are going to be reaching out. Hey, Gio, it's me. I'm coming to the game. Can we meet up after? And so there's going to be a lot of that, and there's going to be a lot of family and friends and requests and things. And so it's going to be really important. The great thing is he has a great support system. He's going to have to lean on his family to kind of filter some of that out for him, so that he can just focus on playing. That's one aspect. And I think that he'll do well at handling that as a veteran guy. The other piece is that for him just to play within himself. And, you know, I think he wants to show that he can contribute and wants to show that he's going to help the group. But all he has to do is what he did last night, which is play simple, be hard to play against, fill a void, help them kill cycle plays, help them do well at keeping the forwards accountable to backside pressure and be the leader that he is and just be his authentic self. So certainly there's added pressure being home, but I think he'll handle it well because he is a mature guy and a guy that's very well respected.
What did you think of his fit against, well, beside Liljegren? He spoke really highly about playing with such a young player and what he brought to the field, and it looked like they kind of complemented each other well. Do you see that being something that might last a couple games, or will he get an opportunity to shuffle around and maybe play with TJ Brodie again?
Yeah, I think, honestly, I think that's where he'll be, in the bottom pair, and that's, there's nothing against that. I think that that's the need that they have. I think he'll be a great complement to a young defenseman like Liljegren, who will, you know, learn from him and learn situations and be a calming influence for him. I also think it's important that we don't expect, you know, Gio to eat up those minutes with TJ Brodie. I mean, is it an option for the coaches to go to that because they know it does work? Yes, but it's not something that's sustainable or that we can necessarily expect Gio to play those kind of minutes against, you know, he's just not at that stage of his career. So could they put them together at the end of periods in certain situations? Absolutely. But I don't see them being a pair very long.
Yeah. I was really, really surprised at how good he looked last night, but it's one game against the Devils, and yeah, maybe asking him to play 20 is unrealistic, but it was, again, pretty interesting to see the way that minutes were deployed and for him to get that many in his first game with the Leafs. I know that it wasn't his first game of the season. He's not working himself back from an injury, but yes, very, very solid debut for him. So you were no stranger to a penalty kill. I'm curious what your thoughts are on just watching Ilya Mikheyev kill penalties, a very unique player who has had more goals go in the net for the Leafs when he's been on the ice on the PK than have gone against him.
Well, I think we need to temper our expectations of a lot of these younger players. I think we all want them to have a linear path to success. And killing penalties, there's so many different nuanced variables that go into it. I think if you're going to take the positive, which I will choose to do, he's got great length. He's got a great stick, good instincts. I think you've seen his ability to escape players and trust his instincts and finish in those opportunities as he did. Learning how to kill penalties in the NHL takes time. There's a lot of variables involved in it. It changes from team to team. Sometimes it takes more time than others, and I'm sure there's Manny Malhotra's watching video with him, showing him those ways that he needs to protect the seams and when to pressure, when not to pressure. There's a lot that goes into it. I think you just have to be a little bit patient. But you saw one great positive is his ability to transition and actually create offense shorthanded with his speed and length.
Yeah, I think that it's pretty much been all positives from him this year. Like, he's somebody who requested a trade before coming into the year. I think he's somebody who wanted to play more minutes and have a bigger role than the one that he had previously had with the Leafs. Maybe some frustrating exits and an injury. But, yeah, this year's been great for him. And, yeah, he's scoring more. He just feels like he's having an impact. It feels like he is now, like, arguably the signature player on one of the Leafs' more definitive lines. It's just that he's an unrestricted free agent this coming offseason. And you wonder what a guy like that is going to command, given that, yeah, he's been so strong on the penalty kill. He is such a strong skater. You just mentioned so many different things about him that are going to be big questions moving forward in terms of how they prioritize him. So, speaking of which, like, I mentioned those minutes on the fourth line. Do you think that you're going to need a little bit more from them? Do you think that this is fine? Like, again, those guys end up with less and less. Blackwell maybe ends up getting a few more minutes than them moving forward here. But yeah, Spezza and Simmons, two older guys. Again, two local guys who aren't playing very much right now. What are you looking for from them on a night-in, night-out basis? What do they need to accomplish down the stretch here, and how can they continue to have impact on playoff games?
Well, first of all, I think they'll have impact whether they play 6 minutes or they play 11 minutes. I think a lot of that will be dictated by who they're playing. I think that the coaching staff probably looked at a New Jersey team. Yes, they're playing back-to-back, but that's one of the fastest forward groups in the entire National Hockey League. Probably doesn't suit the matchup against what Wayne and Spets bring to the table at this point, but they will be valuable contributors in the playoffs. Spezza has been a playoff performer his entire career. I think they will have game to game. They will continue to develop chemistry with Blackwell, lean on his speed. Spezza is a smart player. They'll figure out a way to have success with someone who they know will be able to get in there first and get pucks for them. And I think that their impact will be felt throughout the playoffs.
Okay, one more type of question about igniting a line. The Tavares-Nylander line, you know, that's been kind of a conversation over the last month or so about their productivity and if they've hit a slump or if they need a switch up. If you're Sheldon Keefe, how do you get that line going again, knowing that it's really important to have at least two lines producing come the playoffs in case there's that, you know, traditional quiet Marner situation or Matthews that can't pull it out in the playoffs? How do you get Nylander and Tavares going down the stretch here?
Yeah, you make a great point. I 100% agree. You have to get Tavares going. He's not going to show that outwardly, but you need your centerman who's, you know, as important as he is, an offensive guy contributing offensively. I think you go nuclear. I think you put Tavares up there with Matthews and Marner for a short period of time to get him going. That's at the risk of leaving Willie, you know, really by himself or not with anyone who's a, you know, an amazing player like that. But I think that's what you have to do. The other thing you have to do, in my opinion, is you got to get Willie. In watching him last night, he doesn't have the puck enough, and so he's got to demand the puck and not play so much like a winger, and get off his wing, kind of like Kane does, and come back and demand the puck from the defenseman as you're regrouping so that he has the puck through the neutral zone. I feel like watching him last night, he just allowed the puck because it didn't come to him. He just stayed over there and didn't get the puck. He's got to demand the puck by coming to get it in his own zone, regardless if he's the winger, come back and get that puck and have it more.
Yeah, watching Nylander play at his best is he's aggressive and he has a lot of puck control. We kind of miss seeing him like that, controlling the play. So, you know, hopefully they could ignite that with, what, 20 or 19 games left for the Maple Leafs. We can see you on the desk today for Hockey Central. Is that right?
That's it, yes. Absolutely.
All right, well, excited to continue to see you on the big screen. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Jamal, and we'll catch up down the road.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Jamal
the
Mayers,
big screen,
former NHL forward. Yeah, the big screen. I have a. You have. You're the one with the big TV.
The big screen is movies. What are you?
Well,
the
maybe
big screen.
He can be what a movie
star. Why'd you turn into like a 1930s reporter? We'll see you on the big screen. Like why? What was that?
I'm just giving,
like,
the guy, yeah, some love. You, yeah, can catch him out on, yeah, our channels. Go, yeah, watch, yeah, Sportsnet. Subscribe to the podcast. Jamal,
you're gonna be
Mayers,
a star, kid. You're gonna be a star. We're gonna see you on
he
the silver screen in the pictures. You see?
Did a great job last night filling in, yeah, for Carolyn Cameron, and, yeah, go get him, buddy.
Okay,
sorry, I,
yeah,
won't promote anyone anymore.
Yeah, that was
just
my
our
issue.
Show.
Yeah, I agree. Just our show. Listen, we got to fight. We got to fight for every square inch. Okay, we got to make,
right,
sure that we have our little piece.
Don't
of the,
turn
the
on your TVs.
Pie.
Radio, yeah, only.
Yeah. Oh, the silver screen stars.
I didn't say silver screen.
No, it was like, yeah, it's like, oh, the pictures. Okay, so I actually had a thought about the Giordano thing, though, that he mentioned, because I actually think that this is a weird one, but one of the byproducts of the pandemic has been there's this weird, people don't respect your space as much in terms of contacting you at different times. Like, everyone's kind of available for a text or a call or a Zoom or whatever, right? Like, I've been on vacation and places at work have been, hey, we know you're on vacation, but do you think you could do this quick Zoom video? And you're like, what? Well, just because you're accessible. That part sucks. But you want to get out of plans. You want to get out of seeing somebody. You want to get out of, like, an obligation. It's never been easier. And so for a guy like Giordano, who's coming back here and who, like, Jamal relating his experience, right, of when I came back here, like, that's what he's saying. When I came back here, everybody wanted a piece of me that I knew. And everyone wanted either a ticket or a hang or a beer or whatever. I don't think that that'll be a problem for him. Like, I don't think that's a post-pandemic problem in the way that it was for players who were from here before the pandemic started. Does this make sense? Did you guys buy this for a dollar?
I don't know if it's for $5, just $5. You know, actually, he did kind of comment on this. He said that he has a lot of family, but at this point in his career, they're not really bothering him for tickets anymore. But they did want to see him after the game and kind of, you know, get him back on home ice. And he mentioned that he had just sold his place here and he's got to get another place. So he was living in a hotel. So I think there's
poor guy. He's like, oh, I just,
yeah,
you
poor
know,
guy
I sold
the mansion.
Like, what did you sell your place for in Toronto? Like, in the GTA? I've been, a reporter, I think for the Toronto Star, named Ed Tubb. He's been tweeting out some of the, like, Toronto properties or GTA properties. I don't even say GTA. Like, places that are an hour from Toronto, homes that you look at from the outside and go, oh, that's not very nice. And they're going for, like, $1 million. The housing market right now is insane. So I'm guessing Mark Giordano made a pretty nice penny on the property he sold, and that he'll be all right finding a new place to live. I'm guessing he'll be okay.
Yeah, but, you know, that is an interesting added aspect of getting to play back home, but having, you know, to juggle seeing people and entertaining, you know, family and such. But it looked like there's actually a moment where they had they obviously filmed every single thing he did yesterday, like him warming up, him walking in, like everything was filmed. It was really great. And then there was a moment where he was at center ice stretching before, you know, in the warmups. And you actually, like, kind of, it looks special because he started looking around and I think he was having one of those moments where he's like, wow, this is really happening. You know, I'm at Scotiabank Arena, which used to be the ACC, where he probably grew up, like, wanting to be a part of that atmosphere. And it looked like he just was soaking it in, which is really special. And after the game, you know, we touched on it, but he was really great with the media. He spent a lot of time talking about what it meant to him. I just think it's really cool, you know.
Yeah.
And I hope that adds to the amount of, like, I don't know, positivity that he feels with this decision, and maybe he stays because of that. But it's exciting.
Blake, what do you make of the post-pandemic theory for athletes? Like, just in terms of hometown athletes being in their places? Because, yes, it's cool, but what do you make of just, like, the time constraints and the pressure about it being, a little alleviated given, like, you're home and, we are a little bit more virtual and you don't have to, I think, do as much or go to as many places? No? You seem not into it.
Well, it's just... I feel
like
the type of friend or family member who would put those extra things on you would also, like, if you are prioritizing yourself or thinking, hey, this person should carve out time for me around their NHL schedule, I think you probably also have the mentality, this person should carve out time for me around their pandemic limitations. Like, I should be in their bubble. We'll just, you know, we'll hang out one-on-one instead
Bubbles
of in a group, that
now.
Kind of thing.
I'm not talking about, like, so much pandemic. I just mean, like, our mindset I feel like society has shifted a little bit.
Yeah, but it could go either way. It could be that, or you could have, like, some people might go the opposite way where you're almost trying to make up for the last 2 years of limited socialization and you're trying to, you know, you're trying to get all of that stuff in and you're extra excited about it. I don't know. Could go either way.
If you were trying to spend more time with your family after the pandemic has, you know, died off here, you could take them to the Maple Leafs March 31st game that we're giving tickets away right now for. It's the home game against the Winnipeg Jets. All you have to do is download today's episode of the Fan Morning Show and listen for the code word that will be included in the podcast. Once you've identified today's code word, text it to 590-590 for your chance to win. The winner will be selected tomorrow. So you want to spend some time with those family members you've been neglecting. You got an extra ticket to spread the love. You can win. You can go see the Winnipeg Jets on March 31st.
Glad you specified extra ticket singular, because the way you set that up is like you take your whole family to the Leaf game.
Everybody can come, just your favorite
one. Believe it's only two tickets, so don't overpromise here unless you want to end up being on the outside where two of your family
How
members
beautiful
are like,
of a thing if you give both tickets away and then you become the favorite child or you're the best uncle or, you know, oh my God, I can't believe you gave both tickets away. That would be such a sweet thing. And I'm also available on March 31st if you're interested.
Relax. Worth
a try.
I understand a closed mouth doesn't get fed, but to try to spin our own contest where, as we've established, you personally are giving the tickets away.
Yes, they are.
To then be like, can you give
tickets.
It back also? Because I would like to go to the game. That's tough. But you can download the Fan Morning Show wherever you get your podcasts. Listen for those code words. Text them to 590-590. And keep an eye out tomorrow because the winners will be selected.